You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the celebrated Corner House podcast. I'm Sarah Perks, Programme and Engagement Director here, and this week we review the brutal Australian film Snowtown about their worst serial killer, John Bunting. We hear from artist Paul Digby, who's currently exhibiting his work as part of our Corner House projects. And a taster of things you can do this week is in our Mini What's On guide. And finally, we're not forgetting the Corner House team's recommendation of the week. Let's go straight to working class Adelaide now in the late 90s for this week's film focus called Snowtown. I'm joined by AV technician extraordinaire and sometime host of this very podcast, Dave Petty. Snowtown is the directorial debut of Justin Kurzel, and it follows 16-year-old Jamie in a fairly harrowing tale of abuse, paedophilia, violence and murder as he becomes part of serial killer John Bunting's gang. Dave, what did you know about this film prior to seeing it?
Well, oddly enough, I actually had a brief discussion with Tom Summers, one of the projectionists here at Corner House. You may have heard him on the podcast before. We discussed that if you don't know much about this film going in, it can take you by surprise because fairly harrowing is an understatement. I mean, for those of you that don't know much about the reality behind this film, John Bunting, as Sarah said, one of the worst serial killers in Australia, was helped by James Vlasakis in exposing paedophiles and homosexuals, but that was just more or less a ruse for the kind of enjoyment and gratification that this John Bunting got out of killing people. He was put away for 11 murders, and this film goes into it in rather graphic detail. It genuinely is one of the most harrowing films I've ever watched, and that is no understatement. Tyrannosaur is an absolute, that's like a musical comedy compared to this.
And so it's a true story. Do you think there's a responsibility then because it's portraying what's a particularly heinous crime but also the fact that it's a true story?
About halfway through, there's something horrific that happens. I won't mention it, but I was genuinely on the verge of just going, you know what, I can't handle this film. And I think it does bring up the interesting idea that how far should we take films that are, you know, portraying true stories, how far can we sort of let them go, as it were, but at the same time not end up going on some kind of Mary Whitehouse crusade to, you know, ban this sick film, because it's a fantastic film, very well made, but it's not a film that I really want to go back and watch again, to be honest. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it is very good. But it's such a difficult watch, and genuinely difficult to kind of talk about, because it's not fun. You can't suddenly say, "Oh yeah, go and watch that Snowtown." It is amazing, but it's hard for me to recommend it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it is. It's a really strong film, and we'll come on to some of what makes the strengths of that film. And actually, for me, it tries a little bit to get into the heart of darkness, particularly with the Jamie character, where it does try to explain the kind of, you know, what's happened to him and the rationale. It's much more confusing when it gets to John Bunting, the main serial killer, and it's quite ambiguous there, and it's quite difficult in that sense, I think, because it doesn't really try to explain why or you know, how he's got to this place. What's also interesting about this film is it's by Warp Films, which is the British company behind films like Tyrannosaur that you mentioned before, behind Shane Meadows films, and it's their first Australian outpost, if you like. They've set up a production company over there. And so that made me think a little bit about comparisons with British films and also social realism and gritty films like Tyrannosaur. For me, I think it avoided some of those pitfalls, particularly because it's set in Australia, so it feels different from the typical Northern Council estate that we're used to.
Well, I was going to say, I think one of the filmmakers I initially thought of was Andrea Arnold. But that's not to say it's anything like an Andrea Arnold film. It does have that sort of, you know, that grim tone, you know, people living in not necessarily poverty, but, you know, living in squalor. But it's a very different film. Saying the likes of Andrea Arnold, I even thought of Requiem for a Dream as well, just that sort of how dark and relentless it is. But it's difficult to compare it to other films, especially with the subject matter.
Yeah, I mean, thinking of last week's Wuthering Heights with Andrew Arnold, where this film really comes up as a strength is the actors. I think they're amazing, and I found out that the only professional is actually the one who plays John Bunting. The rest are all non-professional actors, and they do a super job. The mother, Elizabeth, played by Louise Harris, she was apparently just found in a supermarket by the director in the town where it's shot. For me, the female characters were a little bit underwritten and underdeveloped, but that sort of goes with this genre now for me of social realism. And the sort of landscape at the beginning, I mean, it's great, but it's a little bit of a cliche as well. It's used quite a lot in films. Anyway, other strengths, I think the first-time director does an amazing job. The soundtrack is really good. And for me, the cinematography was excellent, except it's still using that blue-green tint that we've talked about every film seems to use this year. So, Dave, who do you think is going to like this film?
It's a difficult thing to say, really, because I think it's the kind of thing that it's not necessarily playing to any particular audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a dramatisation of, you know, real-life events, and you kind of have to take them on face value, no matter who you are coming into the film. As I say, it's a difficult film to recommend, but in no way is that taking away from, you know, what it actually is and what it's trying to say. But I think whoever goes to see it, they'll come out faced with a lot of, sort of, how can I put it, difficult questions. Mm-hmm. It's a film that you do want to talk about, definitely over a stiff drink, though, I would say.
Yeah, and I liked its sort of claustrophobia as well, which is probably part of why it's such an experience to watch. And it really builds, and there's sort of a kind of understated desperation that's seeping in as well. I mean, I wasn't as traumatised, I don't think, as you, but that's partly because I'm completely desensitised after seeing too much stuff.
And well, I would say I'm desensitised as well, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, especially of late, there just seems to have been a lot of, you know, the harrowing sort of social realist films. But it comes at it from a different angle because, you know, that this is, you know, real. Admittedly, it's a dramatisation of events, but it just gives so much more weight to proceedings and, you know, you're sort of watching through your fingers at some points that, you know, what's going on.
So that's Snowtown, and it screens from tomorrow, Friday the 18th of November. As always, the trailer and all the times are on our website, cornerhouse.org/film.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Cornerhouse, Manchester.
Okay, now it's time to have a look at what's on this week. Our ATM film programme continues, and I'd like to highlight two screenings that we've got coming up. The first is from Philippine director Brillante Mendoza, who is the subject of our retrospective. The film is called Manoro, and it's about the Philippine presidential election. Last month, regular contributor Andy Willis caught up with Brillante to hear more about his style of filmmaking.
One of the things, Brillante, that is quite striking about your work across all the films that are showing in the retrospective is a kind of commitment to realism, to showing issues that affect the people in the Philippines, but showing them in a realistic way. I was wondering, is that a style you've quite consciously worked within, given that so many of the films that come out of the Philippines are very melodramatic and you seem to be wanting to represent the country and the people in a different way?
Yeah, because I want to be, the reason why I'm doing this because the documentary look is because I want to be as much as possible close to what is real and what is happening. Because I think the film becomes more effective when you see it like, you know, in real life. There's already a very blur distinction already between what is real and what is not real. You know, what is like when you normally do on a feature film. This is more like a documentary. And when it looks like it's a documentary, people, they will somehow get more engaged and believe that these things are really happening. And when they are engaged already, they become more committed and they become more interested, not only with the film, but more on the issues.
And in a general way, with regard to your filmmaking, how important has new technology been, particularly in terms of enabling you to create the kind of realistic look that your films have?
Well, I must say that the new technology, the digital technology, really made an impact, quite an impact in the way I do films now because the cameras are more handy, especially with the kind of style that I have. I mean, sometimes I would run together with the actors and, you know, go in places like narrow places or locations that are really very hard to shoot in. So it really made, you know, helped me somehow. Unlike when you're using 35mm, the camera is quite heavy and you cannot really set up, especially in this kind of logistics or in this kind of locations that I use in most of my film. So, and I must, you know, recognize and acknowledge actually the kind of camera that we have right now.
So you can see Manoro this Saturday, the 19th of November at 4 p.m. And even better, it's a free screening. So just reserve your place online and enjoy. And for the second screening, everybody was kung fu fighting. That's right, it's a nostalgic kung fu comedy called Gallants. It's a real treat of a film, and we're also pleased to welcome the co-director, Derek Kwok, for a post-screening Q&A, which I'll be hosting. So come along to Gallants this Sunday, the 20th of November at 4:10. Now one for all you art enthusiasts out there. Next Thursday, the 24th of November, we're hosting Art Night here at Corner House. Here's our visual arts program manager, Bren O'Callaghan, with some more details.
Art Night is an opportunity for us to throw the focus a little bit back onto the art programme here at Corner House, and also to ask people for their own opinions and thoughts about what they think we're doing and what they'd like to actually see here in the building. So people can tend to perhaps ignore the galleries, not always intentionally, it is at the top of the building, and also perhaps think that the work that we show is there just to be seen and maybe can't be transported or transferred to their own living rooms. That's not always the case because we have lower cost projects here in the building. So we have the launch of our new Corner House project show, which is the work that we show in the cafe, in the bar, and that's been purposely curated by the exhibitions coordinator here, Thomas Harold, for the Christmas season. It's not Christmas themed, but it's been curated so that it's more affordable. So the works begin anything around £30-35 and go up, but there is something there that we hope will be generally in most people's pockets, and that's been selected by a group of artists called Sweet Studios. So that will be throughout the cafe bar. If £30-35 is a bit too much, then how about £1 for an original piece of art? We're actually erecting something we're calling the Sketch-O-Matic Portrait Booth in the downstairs cafe bar that goes up on Art Night, and it stays up for 10 days and 10 nights. So if you can't come down on the opening night, come down thereafter. We're actually working with 30, that's 30, local Northwest artists. And they're going to be sitting inside this mock-up of a traditional photo booth inside where the machinery would be. There's going to be a tiny artist studio, and they're going to look at people through a one-way mirror. So you can come along and you can sit inside the booth and you can make a suggested donation of £1, and then that person, that artist, and they work across all different forms. So you might get an illustration or a pencil sketch or a doodle or even a word portrait, a poem. They will have approximately 5 minutes to create that for you, and that will pop out of a slot in the side. So you are being both the patron, you know, you're encouraging original art, and you're also the muse as well. So you can come along as many times as you like. So I'd like to see people coming along and getting more than one portrait. Also, we have a screening, quite a rare screening really, of a film called The Rebel from the early 60s, starring the late great comedian Tony Hancock, and that's been chosen because of the theme of the night around art. Is art good? Is art bad? What is art? And the value of art. So in this film, he plays a frustrated civil servant who jacks it all in, decides to declare himself an artist and move to Paris. It's a really funny film. So if you get an opportunity to see that, please do. And then also, if there wasn't already enough going on in the building, we have a talk from two photographers who run something called the Caravan Gallery, and they go around the country taking photographs of the back streets of Britain and things that people might not necessarily find beautiful, but they actually turn it into interesting photographs and interesting art. It could be anything from, you know, dropped ice cream on the floor to misspelt graffiti on the back of a wall. So it's about encouraging people to go and open their eyes and see art everywhere. And they have this really successful book called Is Britain Great? And it's actually now in its third edition. So they're launching the book that night. It's going to be especially discounted at a really good price, I think around £8. So that's much cheaper than it usually is in the shops. And they're actually bringing their caravan gallery with them. So that's going to be parked outside Corner House. And you can pop inside the gallery, see some of their prints, come into the building if you book in advance for the talk itself. We expect that will sell out. And yeah, you can choose from the Caravan Gallery, the Sweet Studios exhibition, the Rebel screening, or pop into Sketch-O-Matic.
Thank you, Bren. And that's Art Night next Thursday, the 24th of November at Corner House from 6 p.m. And moving away from Corner House, Manchester's going to be going all festive today. It's the arrival of the Manchester Christmas Markets. Every year, the city centre squares are transformed into a magical hub of wooden chalets, serving up tasty treats, mulled wine, and of course, your Christmas gift shopping. It's normally a great atmosphere, and it really gets you in the mood for Christmas, so it's well worth checking out. They run until Wednesday the 21st December, so for more information, visit www.manchestermarkets.com or follow them on Twitter at @MCRMarkets. See you there for some mulled wine.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
As part of our visual arts programme here, we provide the opportunity to artists to showcase their work in the bar and cafe here at Corner House. This month is no different. We've got Leeds-based artist Paul Digby's work occupying the walls, and it looks amazing, and I highly recommend you check it out. Last week, our digital reporter Jake Sturges caught up with Paul to find out more about his practice.
My name's Paul Digby. I have a series of large-scale paintings, well, varied-sized paintings, based on urban environments and alienation and isolation, particularly interested in things like psychiatry. And those are what I've been putting into my artwork most recently, as well as being interested in sort of more traditional painterly techniques as well and studying artists. I try to bring in more contemporary issues and use more contemporary references such as computer games and cartoons and those sort of things.
And tell us a little bit about the method of your painting, particularly the medium that you use.
I use gouache paint on paper. The reason I use gouache is it's opaque and flat. So I wanted to create that three-dimensional plane using sort of a flat two-dimensional mediums, really, you know. It was really just to see if I could get that contrast between the two. So that was what I was after, sort of trying to get that dichotomy between two and three dimensions.
So the inclusion of people into your art, it's been quite a new thing for the last three or so years.
Yeah. I graduated in 97, and I was strongly encouraged to not use the figure and to use the space around the figure, which I was happy to do. And I did that for around 10 years. I was trying to capture alienation in my work, not using the figure, and it just wasn't apparent. So I consciously made the decision to use the figure, just an isolated figure. But you'll notice that you cannot see any of the faces of the figure, which is a sort of purposeful trick, really, you know. So I think I managed to kind of capture that alienation more via using the figure and putting them in the sort of barren landscapes, environments that they inhabit.
Okay, so there is a sense, definite sense of alienation there.
Yeah.
I get the impression that the figures are hiding in a way, so hiding their face or...
They are hiding. Yeah, they're afraid and they're anxious and the world around them has come down on them and then they're collapsed. So, yeah, that's definitely what I was trying to get. Yeah, they're pretty destroyed people. Yeah, which is different to, say, someone like Edward Hopper, who obviously I've looked at quite a lot, whereas he would tend to portray people more staring into the void and, you know, the idea being it's the internal gaze. But with this, it's more about the kind of effect of the environment in today, and I think it's greater. I think it's the fast world that we live in is too fast sometimes, and it's a sort of question on that, really. So, yeah, I'm very interested in sort of who we are as human beings and the world that we've created and how we kind of neurologically are attuning ourselves to that, and how sometimes not everybody can kind of be attuned to that. And I would argue that none of us are attuned to that, really. So, yeah, it would just give the impression that we are.
It's about trying to find... the people trying to find their space in the new built environment.
Yeah, it's existential in that sense. Yeah, it's a kind of, who am I? You know, where am I? So there's a definite existential angst that the figures are meant to have. But I wanted it to be much more about mental health, really, and much more about psychosis and depression, which I've had a kind of history of being involved with. And I don't think you get that in someone like Edward Hopper's work, for example. I'm going to go on about him a bit, but it's more psychological, but this is much more about diagnosis and psychiatry and people having breakdowns and those sort of things, because I've worked a lot with people like that. So, you know, I was interested in capturing that, really. But at the same time, it's sensitive in that it's not meant to use mental health like quite a few celebrities do, in that we have to declare our mental illness. It's more a question on kind of the subtleties that in society, that where mental health, mental illness really is, you know, and the stigma surrounding that illness. So I was much more interested in that, I think, and particularly than declaring that I have a mental health problem, which is not really, you know, part of it at all, really.
It can become something, almost a marketing campaign.
Exactly. It's a trick, isn't it? It is. If you get a celebrity, you know, no matter how well-meaning they might be, you know, it's only going to ever benefit their profile, isn't it, you know, ironically, because it makes them seem human and all those sort of things, but as though they never were in the first place. I didn't want to do that. I don't want to go down that path. I wanted to be a bit more subtle. And that's why the figures tend to blend into the backgrounds of the paintings a little bit. It's kind of, well, they're all in the same, which is a painterly trick, really, which I was obviously interested in capturing. Say, in the Pre-Raphaelites, how they'd have a figure and it would be just blending with their costume, their outfit would blend into the background just quite obviously, and then you just see a face and hands, you know, as the only distinct difference of that thing being the human being, really. which again you can see throughout history. I mean, if you look at Duchamp's work, most of that was when he portrayed the figure in Rose Levy. He concentrated on the face and the hands, and so you can see it in the painting. So again, it was just a painterly reference that I was quite keen to use.
Have you ever exhibited in a bar or cafe before?
Some years ago I did, and then I had the rule of not doing that again and concentrating on galleries, but I felt that showing at the Corner House Bar and Cafe was just a wonderful opportunity that I couldn't miss, really. So I'm pleased to be showing here.
So you can see Paul's work in our cafe bar until this Tuesday, the 22nd of November, and all work is for sale. If you'd be interested in exhibiting your work there, then do visit cornerhouse.org/cornerhouseprojects. Okay, now it's time for our staff recommendation of the week. This week, our front of house manager Tom Jeffers gives us his film pick.
My suggestion this week is the Black Power Mixtapes, 1967 to 1975. It's a documentary based on the story of the Black Power movement in America, also encapsulating the music of that period of time. We haven't had a documentary as broad as this for a long period. It's a great documentary, it's educational, it's enlightening, and it's entertaining. Yeah, if you're going to go and see a film this month, it would be the one that I would recommend.
Thank you, Tom. So that's Black Power Mixtape, back on our screens from Friday the 18th of November. To check the times, watch the trailer, go straight to cornerhouse.org/film. That's all we've got time for today. For more information on everything, get to our website, follow us on Twitter, or become a fan of Facebook. And don't forget, this podcast is available every week now on iTunes. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Corner House Podcast.